Good morning. This joint hearing of the Subcommittee on Cybersecurity, Information Technology, and Government Innovation and the Subcommittee on National Security, the Border, and Foreign Affairs will come to order. Good morning and welcome, everyone. Without objection, the chair may declare a recess at any time, and I recognize myself for the purpose of making an opening statement right now. Good morning and welcome to today's historic hearing, which I'm co-chairing with Mr. Grothman, whose subcommittee held an important hearing on this topic last year. I want to thank my colleagues on the Oversight Committee, including Mr. Burchett, Mr. Burleson, Ms. Luna, Mr. Moskowitz, Mr. Garcia, for their relentless drive to get answers on UAPs. They've been steadfast in demanding transparency on the sightings reported by military pilots and armed forces. Their commitment to digging for the truth is exactly what this country needs to cut through the secrecy surrounding this issue. And many high-ranking individuals in the military and intelligence communities believe UAPs demand greater attention, and thus the purpose for this hearing today. Former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said on Bill Maher's program that, quote, there are phenomena that have been witnessed by multiple people that are just inexplicable by the science available to us. Army Colonel Carl Nell, a member of the Federal Government UAP Task Force, said at a conference this past May that non-human intelligence exists, non-human intelligence has been interacting with humanity. This interaction is not new.
So I just have to quickly interrupt Chairwoman Nancy Mace at this point because I feel it's important for our listeners, particularly if you're first-time listeners and you haven't heard this previously. This is what Nancy Mace is talking about when she is saying Colonel Carnell was at the SALT conference last year. Now, it's a little long-winded because I needed you to hear his credentials before he makes his statement, and then we'll get straight back to the Congress meeting November 13, 2024.
Maybe to begin, can you share a little bit about your background, who you are, and perhaps why people should care what you say?
Sure. Well, thanks, Alex. It's a pleasure and honor to be here. So I was fortunate. I had a four-year ROTC scholarship to Penn. I graduated with a degree in electrical engineering. The Army sent me overseas to do Signal Corps engineering projects, so I did a lot of strategic comm projects in Europe. I ended up working in Army Space Command. I commanded a satellite ground station, war trace to the Joint Chiefs. I spent some time at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The Army ultimately sent me to get a master's in mechanical engineering, a master's in strategic studies, graduate work in computer science. I was on track to stay in, but I decided that I wanted to pursue more of a technical career. So I got out and ended up working at Bell Labs, which was a fantastic place. I left Bell Labs and ended up working in Lockheed Missiles and Space. I worked at Northrop Grumman. I've ran strategic technology programs in the defense industry, worked for a lot of the three-letter agencies, ultimately was a deputy chief of staff or deputy CTO for a $2 billion company. I was a vice president general manager of a Northern Virginia-based R&D firm. I stayed in the military, in the reserve. I commanded at every grade level through brigade. I was fortunate to stand up the Army's newest expeditionary MI brigade. I was the deputy chief of staff for a combatant command. Ultimately, this experience sort of combined to give me the opportunity to come in and advise Army Futures Command, the largest reorganization in the Army Reserve since really 1973, on how the Army could be more effective. And my last assignment was involved with the UAP Task Force, which maybe is the most apropos for this discussion.
And so, Carl, here's the million-dollar question. Do you believe that a higher form of non-human intelligence has visited this planet?
Right. So non-human intelligence exists. Non-human intelligence has been interacting with humanity. This interaction is not new, and it's been ongoing. And there are unelected people in the government that are aware of that.
But UAPs remain a controversial topic. I'm not going to name names, but there are certain individuals who didn't want this hearing to happen because they feared what might be disclosed. but we stood firm. No amount of outside pressure would ever keep me from pursuing a subject to ground, come hell or high water. On that score, I want to thank our witnesses for being here. We have before us a panel of individuals accomplished in the military, in civilian government, in science, and in journalism. Some of the testimony you will hear them deliver today does not reflect well on influential individuals and agencies within the U.S. federal government and perhaps some of our contractors. It's never easy to present such information publicly. So I appreciate our witnesses voluntarily agreeing to being here today. This hearing is intended to help Congress and the American people to learn the extent of the programs and activities our government has engaged in with respect to UAPs and what knowledge it has yielded. This includes, of course, any knowledge of extraterrestrial life or technology of non-human origin. If government-funded research on UAPs has not yielded any useful knowledge, we also need to know those facts. Taxpayers deserve to know how much has it been invested, how much has been spent. They shouldn't be kept in the dark to spare the Pentagon a little bit of embarrassment. The reality is, despite their enormous taxpayer-funded budgets, the transparency of the Defense Department and the intelligence community have long been abysmal. The Pentagon has failed 6 consecutive audits. In fact, it's never actually passed one. Adding to this is a runaway overclassification of documents and materials, a reluctance to declassify materials when appropriate, and at times an outright refusal to share critical information with Congress. In short, it's not a track record that instills trust. So Congress has tried in recent years to lift the veil and find out if information about UAPs is being withheld, not only from the American public, but also from their elected representatives in Congress. Part of the transparency effort was legislation created in the Pentagon, the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARRO, but the new office is struggling to get its footing. A recent statutorily required report from ARRO, intended to illuminate the government's historic assessment of UAPs, was heavily criticized by those seeking UAP transparency. The report has stoked suspicions ARRO is unable, or perhaps unwilling, to bring forward the truth about the government's activities concerning UAPs. I'm disturbed that ARRO itself lacks transparency. Even its budget is kept from the public. So if there is no there, then why are we spending money on it, and by how much? Why the secrecy if it's really no big deal and there's nothing there? Why hide it from the American people? Because I'm not a mathematician, but I can tell you that doesn't add up. I expect some of our witnesses to share their views on that ARRO report. We will also hear from the witnesses today allegations of UAP-related misinformation and disinformation by government officials of which they are personally aware and directly experienced. And we will hear testimony today concerning recent revelations about a purportedly secret UAP program whose existence and findings may have been improperly withheld from Congress. But before we get to the witnesses, we're going to have a few more opening statements from our colleagues. And one thing I wanted to add at the end of my closing statement is there is a document that will be entered into the congressional record today. Mr. Tim Burchett from Tennessee has this document, and we just distributed it to every member up here on the dais of this document. But this is going to be the original document from the Pentagon about Immaculate Constellation that Michael Schellenberger delivered to Congress today. So thank you, Mr. Schellenberger, for this information. We are all reading it in real time now, and Mr. Burchett will enter it into the record. But 12 pages about this unacknowledged special access program that your government says does not exist. I will now recognize myself for 5 minutes of questioning. I have a lot of questions and I have a lot of witnesses. So I would just ask if it's yes or no to please just tell me yes or no. If it requires more than that, be very succinct because I would like to go down the line and ask as many questions as possible. So for the Admiral this morning first, former DOD official Chris Mellon reached out to you about satellite imagery from 2017 that depicts a UAP. What were the dates in 2017 when this occurred?
I can't share with you the details, ma'am, but I can do it in a closed setting, and I can also tell you the agency that wrote a report on it.
Okay, so who has the imagery?
I can tell you that in a closed setting.
Can you describe what was depicted in the satellite imagery? Just a description.
It was a UAP, ma'am.
That's it? No other description?
The term that the analysts used, they called it the button. It was a disc-shaped object.
Okay, where was it?
I can't tell you that, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Okay, Mr. Elizondo, you stated in your testimony that, quote, advanced technologies not by our government or any other government are monitoring sensitive military installations around the globe, end quote. If these technologies are not made by any government, who's making them? Private companies, or are you implying they are crafted by a non-human intelligence?
Well, ma'am, that's precisely why we're here. The problem is that, temporally speaking, over decades, not just the last 10 years, to put this in perspective...
Private companies you're implying, or is this non-human intelligence?
It may be both.
Okay.
When it comes to Blue Force technologies, I would not be able to discuss...
Okay. Are you read into secret UAP crash retrieval programs?
We would have to have a conversation in a closed session, ma'am. I signed documentation 3 years ago that restricts my ability to discuss specifically crash retrievals. I submitted for my book through the Dopser process, which took a year for it to be reviewed. And what is in the book is what I was told I'm allowed to talk about.
Has the government conducted secret UAP crash retrieval programs, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Were they designed to identify and reverse engineer alien craft, yes or no?
Yes.
Does the U.S. government have any reverse... we already answered that question about retrieval programs. Do any U.S. contractors have the same?
I would prefer to address that in a closed session, ma'am.
Okay. In your book, you mentioned government employees who've been injured by UAPs, placed on leave, and receiving government compensation for their injuries. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How can the government deny we have recovered craft if they're paying people because they've been injured by recovered craft?
Ma'am, that's a great question. That's why I think we're here again, because I've seen the documentation by the U.S. government for several of these individuals who have sustained injuries as a result of a UAP incident.
It's a crazy idea, right? The hypocrisy and the logic. Okay, Mr. Schellenberger, I'm going to say it again to be very clear. Immaculate Constellation. What's its mission and how are they funded?
Its mission is to, as I stated, its mission is to, it's an unacknowledged special access program. Its mission is to document UAPs.
Okay. And do you, for your story and your report, do you have more than one credible source?
I do.
Sourcing? Okay.
I do.
And then why do you believe your sources to be credible? How do you judge the veracity of the documentation you've been provided about this program?
I checked the sources, and they are who they say they are. They are current or former government officials. Mm-hmm. I wanted to also add that I did not specify that they were Defense Department employees. I didn't specify the agency nor the gender.
Would they have included non-government employees, people that aren't employed by the government?
I'm comfortable saying that these are government or previously government employees.
Any of them currently employed by a private contractor or private contractors?
I'd rather not say.
Okay. What's the key takeaway, just a few seconds, about the Immaculate Constellation document you provided us today?
I think that what the American people need to know is that the U.S. military and intelligence community are sitting on a huge amount of visual and other information, still photos, video photos, other sensor information, and they have for a very long time. And it's not those fuzzy photos and videos that we've been given. There's very clear high resolution.
How many visuals, graphics, videos, photos?
I mean, I've been told hundreds, you know, maybe thousands. I mean, I also wanted to say, because there was some conversation around concern around the revealing of these materials, revealing the source collections, but some of these are shot from helicopters using normal videos of oceans. I just think that's absurd that somehow you're going to be revealing some secret U.S. technology by revealing that you've photographed orbs off the coast of Kuwait.
Okay, thank you. You have 8 seconds. Mr. Gold, did the NASA independent study team get briefed on what you call OSAP? Very quickly.
I flagged the Advanced Aerospace Weapons System Application Program to our chair and our DFO. We did not get briefed, but I believe it is definitely worth looking into. That was probably the largest UAP review effort ever, and I think produced a lot of interest data, including revealing Nimitz. I don't know if my fellow witness, Lou, might want to. He did yeoman's work on it, might want to comment.
Okay. All right. I'm going to turn to Mr. Moskowitz, who will be recognized for 5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. So, Mr. Gold, you gave a whole diatribe for a couple of minutes about UAPs, science, data collection, stigma. A lot of non-believers in all of this would just ask a very simple question. Why? Why is it so hard? Right? Like, why are people, anytime they ask, why are they always thwarted? Why are they always judged? Why is they always have misinformation spread? Why is there always retribution? Why is it always met with an ear? What's the why? If it doesn't exist, why is there? Why is it such a problem?
I think if you go through the history of science, Representative, it is always difficult for breakthroughs and new information, regardless of whether it's UAP or any other kind of discovery. And in science, we're supposed to be open, but when you break with the orthodoxy of what's believed, whether it's Galileo saying that the Earth doesn't rotate or the Earth rotates around the Sun or the Sun doesn't rotate around the Earth, it's always challenging for new beliefs. And the more extraordinary those discoveries, the more extraordinary those new beliefs, it's very difficult. So I think this is natural. There's natural conservatism that when it comes to science, but this issue in particular has been very difficult where, again, even to attempt to study it becomes problematic. But every hearing like this, every news report, every video, documentaries, I was privileged to be a part of something Dan Fair is putting together. I think many of us have interviewed for it, documentary over 30 different government officials. Every brick in the wall will help get us closer to getting to the truth.
I appreciate that. Mr. Elizondo.
Sir.
I'm going to put my, I'm a recovering lawyer, so I'm going to put my hat on for a second. You said you signed a document. Love that. Who gave that to you?
The U.S. government, sir.
Okay. You have a copy of it?
It is stored in a skiff right now. I do not have possession of it. The U.S. government does.
What department of the U.S. government gave you this document?
I will say the Department of Defense. Unfortunately, I can't say in this forum much more than that.
You specifically said the document said you can't talk about crash retrieval. Well, you know, you can't talk about Fight Club if there's no Fight Club.
Correct.
Okay, I'm just making an observation.
Yes, sir.
So that document that you signed that you said exists specifically said you can't talk about crash retrieval.
Correct, sir. It was a limitation on what I, because already I'd been speaking publicly about the topic, and so the document said you can continue saying XYZ, but you cannot discuss the topic.
When you, give me the atmosphere of signing this document. You're in a room by yourself?
I'm in a skiff with a security officer, sir.
Just one-on-one? Anybody else?
There may have been an assistant as well. It was in a skiff within a Department of Defense facility.
Give me your background real quick.
My background is I went to school to study microbiology and immunology, entered into the U.S. Army, and after a very short stint in military intelligence, I became a counterintelligence special agent as a civilian. Later on, I became a special agent in charge, running investigations in counterterrorism and counterespionage primarily, with some experience in counterinsurgency and counter-narcotics. And then in 2009 timeframe, when I came back to the Pentagon after a tour with the Director of National Intelligence, I quickly became part of a program that was originally called OSAP that evolved into the program now called ATIP, which is where those videos that we now see, the GoFast, the Gimbal, the FLIR, that was part of our effort, sir.
Right. So you don't, you're not some conspiracy theorist. You actually have a legitimate background.
Well, sir, I'm certainly not a conspiracy theorist. I'm fact-based, just a fact.
So when you're in this room, I want to paint the picture for everybody. You're in this room, you're by yourself, you're in a skiff, you're handed a document. How long is the document?
It's about a page front and back. So basically you have some things they call trigraphs, which I cannot, again, talk
to. How long were you given to sign the document?
As long as I needed, sir.
And what if you didn't sign it?
Well, I suspect there'd be repercussions. I wouldn't have access to certain information.
Were you allowed to conduct, ask a lawyer, or weren't allowed to ask for a lawyer to review the document?
It wasn't an option, but they probably wouldn't have allowed me to, because the document itself was pretty explicit about you have to be, wait, you're putting me in an interest. Let me try to thread a needle here. There are certain documents that we have in the U.S. government that allow people to have access to certain programs, whether it's a special, and I'm going to be very generic here, whether it's a special access program or a controlled access program, SAP, CAP, whatnot.
How many people have to sign that document?
It depends how many people are going to get access to the information, sir.
Okay. Last question. Doctor, real quick, can you tell us about the Omaha incident in greater detail. I've read your background, right? Some people would label you as a member of the deep state, since you worked in government for a long period of time. But can you tell us more about that incident? You've written a lot about that.
I wrote a lot about incidents like it, Congressman, but that specific incident involved the USS Omaha, the Littoral combat ship, again, something that was aloft but had no observable exhaust or control surfaces. So it was something that couldn't be explained. And then they saw it enter the water from the atmosphere and going through the air-sea interface, and so thus exhibiting transmedium travel.
Thank you. I yield back.
Thank you. I'll now recognize Mr. Grothman for 5 minutes of questioning.
Yeah, we'll start with Mr. Gallaudet. During a previous UAP hearing, Navy Commander David Fravor discussed the TikTok object engaged in 2004. You familiar with the incident, the TikTok incident?
Yes, sir.
And that's almost 20 years ago, right?
Yes, sir.
It's been said there are more videos, documents, and reports related to this incident. Do you believe the information regarding the TikTok incident should be available to all members of Congress? And in your expertise, what reason would the Department of Defense possibly have for not releasing information that's over 20 years old?
Thank you, Congressman. I don't think there's any good reason to withhold information and important data, especially of national security concern, from Congress.
Well, what would they say?
I will speculate, sir, that they don't want to share that kind of information because it reveals weaknesses in our ability to monitor and protect our airspace.
Okay. In your written testimony, you claim last year's UAP hearing before this oversight committee confirmed that UAP-related information is, well, it's not only being withheld, but that elements of the government are engaging in a disinformation campaign to include personal attacks designed to discredit UAP whistleblowers. Could you elaborate on that statement a little?
Yes, sir. Earlier this year, I met with the DOD's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, and what I thought would be a 90-minute meeting just to meet with leadership turned out to be an hours-long influence operation on me, where they attempted to convince me of the validity of the very flawed and error-ridden historical records report. In addition, they tried to have me question very valid UAP reports like the Tic Tac incident, and even coming to stating possibly that the Tic Tac was American technology. And then, of course, if you ask David Fravor or Alex Dietrich, the two witnesses, they were convinced it was otherwise. And then and they also cast discredit on various UAP whistleblowers and witnesses question their validity and credibility as witnesses.
Okay. We'll go to Mr. Elizondo. Hope I got that right, or not at least
close enough, sir.
You're familiar with the recent drone incursion over Langley Air Force Base?
Yes, sir.
The owners of these drones remain unclear. The U.S. military has not been able to give us in Congress an answer. Given your experience with the Department of Defense and the intelligence community, how frequently are UAP sightings over military installations? And secondly, I suppose hypothetically, you could have incursions over just, say, regular airports. Is it obvious these incursions are more likely over military facilities than just a random airport out there?
Yes, sir. There's definitely enough data to suggest that there is certainly some sort of relationship between sensitive U.S. military installations, also some of our nuclear equities, and also some of our Department of Energy sites. There is a long historical record that some of your colleagues may have, documentation that demonstrates this. This is not a new trend. This has been going on for decades, and that information has been obfuscated, unfortunately, from folks like you in this committee. And I think that's problematic because ultimately, at the end of the day, we have a significant situation here. We have something that can enter into U.S. airspace completely with no attribution.
And how long has this been going on?
Sir, decades. And there's information that will hopefully be entered into the record.
Can you think of any possible reason why they can't release any information they have on something, say, 15 or 20 years old?
Sir, if I could echo my colleague here, Admiral Gallaudet, I think one of the big issues that we have in the intelligence community and Department of Defense is we don't want to broadcast any potential vulnerabilities or weaknesses in our national defense systems or on intelligence collection platforms. Therefore, when you have a conversation where you address a problem for which there is no solution, it makes that a very uncomfortable conversation to have.
Okay, we'll switch to Mr. Schellenberger. The primary reason you're here today is because you published an article on the news publication that you own called Public, right? Alleging that a new unnamed government whistleblower has come forward asserting that a highly classified program exists dedicated to recovery and reverse engineering of UAP technologies. What can you give us what specific evidence you have or that your source provided you to substantiate the claims about the existence of the Immaculate Constellation program?
Well, you have the report in front of you now, so you can see it for yourself. I checked the report, and I did not find it based on existing cases. It was new cases for me. I hadn't found anybody. So that answered for me that it was not obviously circular reporting, which is one of the big concerns in this space. I also had the name of the program confirmed by more than one additional source. I checked to make sure that the source was who they claimed to be.
Okay.
I should also say that when I said before it was this database, it is a much broader program than that. It also includes human intelligence, and then, as you mentioned, the retrieval and the...
Any knowledge of what country these things originated in?
No. No, I have no idea.
Okay.
Okay, I will now recognize Mr. Burchett for 5 minutes of questions.
Thanks, Chair Lady. I request unanimous consent to enter into the record documents provided to us regarding legacy UAP programs and psychological operations, Lou Elizondo.
So ordered.
I also want to thank my buddy Jeremy Corbell for providing us documents and access to some whistleblowers. Mr. Elizondo, what is your last position with the federal government?
Sir, I was the director of National Program Special Management Staff managing a White House special access program on behalf of the National Security Council.
How would you characterize UAPs?
An enigma, sir, and a frustration. We are talking about technologies that can outperform anything we have in our inventory. And if this was an adversarial technology, this would be an intelligence failure eclipsing that of 9/11 by an order of magnitude.
Are there classified Department of Defense materials related to UAPs that you believe could be safely disclosed to the public without compromising national security?
Yes, sir, I do. I would never, ever try to endorse providing some sort of information that could compromise what we call a blue force technology or capability. But I do believe there's a lot of information regarding this topic, and I've been very vocal about it, that should be shared not only with the public, but most importantly, with members of Congress.
Are you familiar with my friend David Grush?
Absolutely, sir. I had the privilege and honor of working with him myself several years ago at U.S. Space Force.
Last year, as you know, he testified that the U.S. has run a multi-decade UAP crash retrieval and reverse engineering program. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Are there UAP programs operating without proper congressional oversight?
100%.
What are they?
Unfortunately, sir, I would have to have that conversation in a closed session.
I know you said that, and a lot of people are frustrated with those kind of answers, but we're asking those kind of questions so you all know what the heck we're up against. You also mentioned in your opening statement that the Pentagon's Public Affairs Office employs a psychological operations officer as a singular point of contact for UAP-related inquiries. Why the heck would they do that?
Sure, that's a great question. I would ask the Pentagon. There's a long history here of that individual providing misleading and false information to the public through various news outlets and media outlets in order to discredit this topic. I've personally been victim to it. We have the documentation to substantiate where this information has been absolutely inaccurate, that has been provided time and time again. And it turns out that individual was also working with former leadership of Aero at the time as well.
And we punish them by giving them multi-million dollars more than they ask for every year. Admiral Gallaudet, you mentioned in your opening statement on an email you received from the operations officer of the Fleet Forces Command regarding unknown objects almost colliding with U.S. military planes. Did anyone respond with knowledge of what the objects were?
I received no response, sir.
Did the exercise get canceled?
The exercise did not get canceled.
Why do you think the Commander of Fleet Forces Operations Officer never discussed the incident again?
Sir, I'm speculating because I didn't have an exchange with him, but I believed it to be part of a special access program, the information and the video, which we have known now it was, and he realized he couldn't share that openly with the recipients of the email, and therefore, the email was pulled from everybody's account.
Again, tell us what happened to the email from the Commander of Fleet Forces.
The day after I received it, and all the other recipients received it, which were all the subordinate commanders of U.S. Fleet Forces, so 1 and 2-star admirals, including strike group commanders, the email was wiped or deleted from our accounts.
Okay.
And then no one talked about it.
All right. Have you specifically had any experience with submersible objects?
Sir, I've not no personal experience, but I've had witnesses on submarines come to me and say they've seen on sonar data.
Correct. Okay. How would you characterize those, and how do they move?
The one instance that was revealed to me was in the 80s on a nuclear-powered submarine, a ballistic missile submarine, that the object exhibited the characteristics of a Russian torpedo in terms of its speed of movement and closing rate with the submarine, and then it slowed and followed the submarine slowly in its wake for a period of minutes, and then rapidly exited the scene. And nothing that we know of in technology-wise could replicate that.
And the speed of these objects was faster than anything that we have or anybody else has that would be manned. Is that correct?
It was on the order underwater of a torpedo.
So yes, sir.
But as it exited,
I don't exactly know how fast a torpedo is, but I expect it does better than my old outboard Scott Atwater, so I'll take that as a yes.
Yes, okay. Sir.
Have you experienced any experience with the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, ARRO?
Yes, Congressman. As I mentioned previously, I have met with them.
Okay. You heard Mr. Alexander describe psychological operations for those contacting the Department of Defense about UAPs. You mentioned a similar influence operation by ARRO. Why are federal agencies invested in running information operations about UAPs if they do not exist?
Yes, sir. But I'll make a statement on ARRO's behalf. They have new leadership. The office has reached out to me to meet again, and I take that as a good faith effort, and we'll see where that goes.
Thank you, Chairlady. I've run over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tennessee. I would now like to recognize Mr. Higgins. You're the king of Tennessee. Mr. Higgins, you're recognized for 5 minutes of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Elizondo, Mr. Schellenberger notes in the report that we've been given for this hearing, I believe Mr. Schellenberger, let me shift you, are the author of this report.
I'm sorry, sir, I'm not the author.
Mr. Schellenberger, were you the author of this report?
No,
no name
not
on it.
No.
Do you know the author?
I do.
You do. And how would you estimate that madam or gentleman, the author?
The person is a current or former U.S. government employee.
And it states here that this is the public version of the author's report.
Yes.
So where might one find the non-public version of the author's report?
I don't know the answer to that.
Would that be with the Department of Defense?
I don't know.
But you do know the author?
I do.
You know what the author's sources were?
The author's sources are described in the report, these databases, the Immaculate Consolation.
Right, but you expressed some confidence in the sources.
I would.
Earlier in testimony,
do.
You expressed confidence. So do you know those sources?
I do.
Are they within the Department of Defense?
I can't say.
You can't say or you won't say?
I won't say.
Okay, why not?
Because I protect my sources, and I think the reason.
But you're not naming them. It's a big department. Many of us on my side of the aisle would say it's far too big. So you're talking about the Department of Defense, sources from within the Department of Defense?
I'm not willing to reduce the potential universe of where my sources might be.
Okay, moving on. In this report, Mr. Elizondo, for reference, several types of allegedly alien craft or possibly alien craft or unknown aerial phenomena, what we used to call UFOs, or describe spheres and orbs, discs and saucers, oval or tic-tac, triangular shape, boomerang and arrowhead, and irregular or organic. Mr. Elizondo, does that summarize to you the types of craft that we're discussing today?
Sir, that is a general morphology, historically speaking, of many UAP.
So those descriptions are very different craft. Is it your Is it your assessment that they would come of different origins?
It's possible, but it also could be a matter of utility. And let me just state for the record, I never read the report or the article that Mr. Schellenberger put out.
That's a good point. We're just referencing it.
Yes, sir.
For descriptive purposes for the American people. Mr. Schellenberger, in this report, it's striking to me that regarding the descriptions of experiences with these various craft, several of them include biological effects and several do not. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so spheres and orbs, triangular craft, and irregular or organic craft include some descriptions of biological effects, including feelings of unease, electronic device malfunctions, long-term psychological effects such as anxiety or insomnia have been noted, feeling of being watched, a shared awareness with the triangle craft, and under the irregular and organic craft, biological effects include physical sensations of warmth or cold and unexplained smells and psychological distress. So these are very specific descriptions of the reactions of human beings, which allegedly have been noted from a study here, a report. All of those experiences would have been described by the sources that the author used.
I'm not sure I understand.
This is a very broad description of biological effects, and it's striking to me that they are present with relation to some types of craft, but
right,
absent in others. This would require a great deal of research and study. Can you explain that?
My understanding is that this is the database is very large. It includes both the images, the videos, the still images, as well as the human intelligence, the reports, the raw data from individuals having these experiences. So in answer to your question, yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at a very large amount of data collected over many decades.
And that data is held by the Department of Defense?
Well, I will say that after I published, I was told that this program, that the USAP was actually managed by the Department of Defense, but held at the White House.
Roger
that.
But
that's a single source, and I don't have multiple sources to verify that.
Thank you, sir. I did my best to trick an answer out of you, but I was partially successful. Madam Chair, I yield.
Thank you. I now recognize Mr. Frost for 5 minutes of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to serving on this committee, the Oversight Committee, I also serve on the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, where we often discuss how essential data and evidence are used in science and used at departments such as NASA. During a hearing, NASA Administrator Nelson affirmed the importance of NASA in helping us to understand UAP. Mr. Gold, if the government doesn't have the data it needs on UAP because, say, someone who saw something is concerned about stigma, public backlash, et cetera, or maybe there's just not good systems in place, how are we supposed to ultimately figure out what's going on?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And let me compliment Administrator Nelson that there wouldn't have been a UAP independent study team if it wasn't for his leadership and courage. We're talking about data and where we can get data from. As I described, NASA has whole archives of data, much of which I believe will likely have information that will help inform UAP. We need only look. And again, in an era with AI and ML, we can relatively quickly and easily go through it. So I think it's something that we should encourage NASA to do. However, per Chairman Grothman's comment about UAP focusing on national security sites, I believe there's something, sir, that you may have heard of called sensor bias. Mm-hmm. that because we've got more cameras, more monitoring of national security, we don't know how extensive UAP activity may be over civilian areas. And this is to the second part of your question, where we're not collecting the data. We're not collecting sufficient data from pilots. We're not collecting sufficient data from civilian and commercial activities. And this is, again, where ASRS, I think, could substantially change that, get the data out there, and allow us to do good science. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, on the data, you know, I'm a really big proponent of transparency. But obviously, there's always a little bit of balance that we have to have in government on transparency as well. I mean, last year, NASA appointed a director of UAP research in response to the recommendation by the independent study team. In the final report, there's a quote, despite numerous accounts and visuals, the absence of consistent, detailed, and curated observations means we do not presently have the body of data needed to make definite and scientific conclusions about UAP. Can you just talk really quickly about that balance of security and transparency?
So I can say, having served at NASA, it is the most transparent organization I've ever been in. When we would have conversations of executive leadership, things would leak out almost instantly. So I can assure you, intentionally or not, NASA's very transparent. I don't know if many of you have worked with engineers or scientists. They love to talk. So I believe that NASA is a paradigm of transparency. But we must have the ability and the data to be able to be transparent with. And if we're not gathering that, if we're not looking at it, then we can't bring NASA into the game and get to that good science that you need.
You know, it was about a year ago, I was touring a facility with a pretty senior government official. We went by a certain hangar and they said, yeah, that's, you know, a company leases that out. We don't really know what's going on in there. We have no way of knowing what's going on in there. And there was a few of those, in fact, while we were driving around this facility. To what extent do you think that some of the UAP out there comes from off the books or unauthorized experimental aircraft?
I mean, I think probably the vast majority of UAP are drones, experimental aircraft, weather conditions, which is again why I say if we review the data, I think we're going to discover a lot about things we weren't even thinking about. But there is a percentage that isn't. And looking into those anomalies is how discoveries will be made. And relative to science, Congressman, if I can say, when NASA studies black holes, when NASA studies galaxies, we have instruments that are tailored to do so. With UAP, we're using cockpit gun cameras or cell phones. We could never do good science with that. And let me tell you, the NASA budget is under pressure. We need to make sure that the Artemis program is funded fully. We need to beat China to the moon and maintain our presence in low Earth orbit. So NASA would need more money to do this. But I think tailored instruments that would look at UAP in the same way that we have tailored instruments to look at astronomical data is important to gathering valuable and uniform information. If we were studying black holes by using fighter cockpit cameras, we probably wouldn't know that much about black holes.
100%. Well, I think it's important that federal leaders take the necessary steps to ensure that UAP does not pose threats to the American public as well, and that we have the necessary budgets to collect this data so we can actually see what's going on. And I'm fully supportive of funding the Artemis mission. I think it's very important. Also, a personal note, the pilot is a frat brother of mine. He is a member of the Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, and so I would love to see my fraternity make it to the moon.
But Redwire is building the cameras for Artemis, so we will take some pictures of your frat brother and get them.
There we go. Thank you so much. I yield back.
Thank you. I will now recognize Ms. Luna for 5 minutes of questioning.
Mr. Elizondo, to your knowledge, can you name the country and around time frame that the first back-engineered UAP program started?
Ma'am, unfortunately, I would not be able to have that conversation in public.
Can anyone on the panel name that?
I cannot.
None of you? Okay. This next question is for Mr. Gallaudet. To your knowledge, have any USOs ever outpaced our submarines?
Yes, ma'am.
At what magnitude?
I don't have the exact speed, but again, a witness came to me, a credible former submarine officer who observed it on sonar data. And this was in the 80s in the North Atlantic during a storm, and it outpaced his submarine by orders of magnitude.
Are you aware of any hot spots that currently exist off our shores in North America?
Not with sufficiently credible data, ma'am.
Okay, we've heard reports of there potentially being hotspots, maybe entry and exit points. Have you heard of any of that?
I have not, ma'am, but my colleague here, Mr. Elizondo, does discuss some USO activity that he's observed in certain DOD databases.
Mr. Elizondo, in regards to these aircraft being piloted by whatever they might be, non-human biologics, would you agree that it's likely that they are being piloted by some mind-body connection?
Ma'am, I think it is safe to presume here that they are being intelligently controlled because they, some cases, seem to anticipate our maneuvers, and in other cases, they seem to, I came across an email where the word stalked was used in a very secure email between Navy officers discussing their ships being pursued by a UAP.
In our previous panel, we had Grush, and he had testified to say that some of these were interdimensional beings. Can you speak on that at all?
Ma'am, I'm not qualified, certainly as a scientist or otherwise, to speculate points of origin. I looked at everything from a scientific perspective. So if you look at, for example, instantaneous acceleration, which was one of the observables of the program that I belong to, ATIP, the human body can withstand about 9G forces for a short period of time before you suffer negative biological consequences, blackouts and ultimately redouts and even death. Comparison, our best technology, the F-16, which is one of this older platform, but one of our most highly maneuverable aircraft, manned aircraft, made by General Dynamics, can perform about 17 or 18 G-forces before you start having structural failure, meaning that the airframe begins to disintegrate while you're flying. The vehicles we're talking about are performing in excess of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 Gs.
So are you... I guess, would it be safe to infer that they're living craft?
I'm not prepared at this point to state for the record is something alive or not, because even that definition is, or there was a time in science we thought that life required oxygen, and we now know that's not true. There are anaerobic bacteria that thrive in oxygen environments that lack oxygen. And so also same with photosynthesis. When I was in college, I was told everything is derived from photosynthesis as a form of energy. In reality, that's not true. There are things that live off of chemosynthesis. So we're constantly having to reevaluate our understanding of what the definition of life is.
Mm-hmm. Do any of you ever come across reports from people that claim to have firsthand experiences with these entities, whatever they might be, or these aircraft, and then as a result, whether or not they're religious, find that these things will automatically disappear? Anyone, this is open to any of you on the panel. So just real quick, because I'm running out of time. Lou?
Ma'am, I've always been a nuts and bolts kind of guy. When I was at ATIP, I was focusing more on the performance characteristics and less on the potential occupants.
Okay. The reason I ask is because it seems like, just based on our conversations, that we've had people that say that there are good and bad of whatever these things are. And so my concern from a national security perspective is A, that true? B, are you guys hearing the reports of that? And C, I think moving forward in regards to technology, Mr. Gold, if you can answer this real quickly, some of these aircraft, it seems that they are operating off of energy that we don't currently have. But just yes or no, in your opinion, if we were able to obtain that, would that impact humanity for the better or negative?
Would certainly save us some money on funding on Artemis.
Definitely.
And this is a national security issue, that if there is such technology out there, we're not the only country that might have access to it. We don't want to be on the wrong end of technological surprise.
Okay. Thank you guys for your time.
All right. Thank you. I will now recognize Mr. Garcia for 5 minutes.
Thank you. And I apologize for stepping out. My governor is here upstairs, so I'm trying to get in between meetings. So I apologize for that. I want to just start by just asking everyone on the panel and our witnesses, and I had a chance to read all the testimony before. But just to set the agenda, just if we can go down real briefly, do you believe, just for the record, that the federal government, any part of the federal government, is knowingly concealing evidence about UAPs from the public?
Yes, sir.
100%.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. I also want to just go down the line. And I know many of you have already said this, but I just, for the record again, just briefly, what do you believe UAPs could be or are?
Strong evidence that they are non-human, higher intelligence.
I echo my colleague's comment, sir.
Genuinely do not know.
don't know, but we must find out.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate those answers, gentlemen. I think this is obviously another remarkable hearing with just really important information, so I thank all of you for answering the questions. Admiral, I just want to go back to one thing. Now, last year, our subcommittee heard from two retired Navy pilots, Lieutenant Ryan Graves and Commander David Fravor, regarding UAPs. Actually, I think Ryan is here in the audience and been a great person to get to know and to have conversations with. He, of course, has been involved in the Safe Airspace for Americans Act with Chairman Graves and been a great person to get to know and to have conversations with. He, of course, has been involved in the Safe Airspace for Americans Act with Chairman Graves, with Chairwoman Mace for UAP reporting by civilian aviation personnel. Can you discuss briefly why it's important for civilian pilots to be able to report UAPs and why these legal protections are critical for our national security?
Yes, Congressman, thank you. And I did invite Ryan Graves as my guest, as I'm on his advisory board for the Americans for Safe Aerospace, and the legislation that you supported and introduced, I fully support as well. And I think it's important that more civilian pilots, commercial pilots, report so we can better understand and learn and do research on UAP, as well as remove the stigma so more citizens report on what they observe. And also, it'll only contribute to aviation safety when we have a better understanding of where these UAP are, how they operate, and at what frequency and what capability level. So it's important for aviation safety, and it'll be important for moving science and research forward.
Thank you, sir. And I just want to just reiterate to my colleagues, I mean, this is a very bipartisan piece of legislation, and we just got to continue to get this through the Congress. And it's incredibly important that civilian pilots have the opportunity to safely report the UAPs that they are seeing or encountering in the air. And I can't express how critical this piece of what I believe is a larger collection of evidence and facts actually happened. We've been approached by pilots. I've talked to folks that have been engaged with our office and others, and there is still enormous stigma. And essentially, we don't have a system where folks are feeling free to be able to report what they're seeing. And so I just want to reiterate that that advocacy. Mr. Gold, in your testimony, you discuss NASA's Aviation Safety Reporting System, a confidential, non-punitive reporting mechanism. In the Safe Airspace for Americans Act, we explicitly allow for civilian reporting, of course, of UAPs. Can you explain why the NASA task force recommended the use of the Aviation Safety Reporting System?
The Aviation Safety Reporting System is an existing system that is trusted, that has taken hundreds of thousands, now millions of cases. And again, recognizing budgetary constraints, this seemed like the perfect way to be able to gain more data. And when it comes to the stigma, sir, it's something that pilots are used to reporting on, that crew is used to reporting on. So it's a great way to get data, to overcome the stigma without spending really that much more additional money since the system exists. Thank you so much for your support of that. Thank you for what Ryan Graves does. This is a common sense means to expose the truth of UAP for the purpose of this hearing.
Thank you. And I just want to also add, now earlier this year, as part of the House Defense Authorization Bill, the NDAA, I had filed an amendment to include the UAP Disclosure Act, which would create a UAP Records Review Board and exercise of eminent domain over UAP-related material modeled actually on the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act, which is widely known. Now, the amendment was blocked, but thankfully the Senate included the amendment by Senator Rounds and Schumer for the UAP Disclosure Act. So I just again want to say that we should be pushing and ensuring the UAP Disclosure Act, which is bipartisan in its support, should move forward. And if I can just briefly Admiral, can you just briefly, as I close my time, explain why the UAP Disclosure Act would be critical for us and our national security?
Thank you, Congressman. Yes, I believe the UAP Disclosure Act is important for national security, as well as advancing potential socioeconomic benefits resulting from UAP research, as well as public safety, as we referred to previously regarding aviation. And this act will allow for greater transparency and open research, and that's why I'm also a member of the UAP Disclosure Fund as an advisor, as in the Seoul Foundation, as an advisor, senior strategic advisor, which is advocating for the same.
Thank you very much. I yield back.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to recognize Mr. Biggs for 5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for holding this committee. Thank you to the witnesses. Admiral, the video that is called the GoFast video, the email that you've talked about being deleted, I just want to briefly cover this You said that the email, the author was asking whether any of the recipients were aware of the classified technology demonstrations that it could explain the objects that were observed. And then you said the email disappears. Then you guys have a series of meetings. The commander of fleet forces and his operations officer never discussed the incident again. Is that right? Is that accurate?
That's accurate, sir.
And even during weekly meetings, it was never discussed again. My question for you is, you were in those meetings. Did you personally hear that nothing was going on about that?
Yes, sir. I was in those meetings, and
did you make inquiries about that?
No, I did not, because I inferred, since I had been read into other special access programs, that this UAP video was part of one that I was not read into, or any of the recipients, or the author of the email, and that an intelligence agency basically pulled it back and instructed the author of the email, hey, this is, you just conducted what they call spillage into a lower classification level. And when that's done, the procedures are basically to remove any of the communications.
You're going
to
silo it. So, and you, Mr. Elizondo, you said in your report and your testimony today, a government work on the UAP subject still remains classified. Excessive secrecy has led to grave misdeeds against loyal civil servants, military personnel, and the public, all to hide the fact that we are not alone in the cosmos. Fair?
Yes, sir.
All right. And all of you, and Mr. Schellenberger, by the way, I've read several of your books, Mr. Schellenberger, excellent stuff.
Thank you.
What I would say, too, is you were asked about the veracity of the author of this report. You're comfortable with the veracity?
Yes.
Okay. And then, and I'll get to you in a second, Mr. Gold. We'll talk about Kunian and Lakatoshian scientific advancement and our obviating that through these processes. But we'll get to that in a sec. Because what I want to really get to is the ultimate question really becomes this. For what purpose is the federal government overclassifying, because that's what they're doing, they're overclassifying, and forbidding the public from getting access to this? And if you know, if you have an explanation, I'm curious, because I know what I've been told. I just want to know from your perspective, why do they overclassify? Mr. Elizondo, you look like your finger on the button, ready to go.
Yes, sir. Forgive me. I think there are several reasons. I think at the time when this reality became evident to the U.S. government, we were in the middle of the Cold War with then Soviet Union, and we did not want to tip our hands to what our knowledge base was on this topic. We did not want to broadcast that to
the Cold War. Cold War is long over.
It is, sir. There's also then the philosophical argument that the Department of Defense and the intelligence community is solution oriented, and when you don't have answers, it's a really tough spot to be in.
It's easier to be quiet and suppressed than if you don't have the answer.
Indeed, sir. In fact, there's a very real example when we built the U-2 spy plane and flew it over then Russia, and we're taking reconnaissance. And when we first started flying the aircraft, it flew so high and so fast, we thought they weren't tracking us. In reality, they were tracking every flight. It yeah. wasn't until the Russians could develop the SA-2 surface-to-air missile and successfully shoot
and
them down.
I would suggest to you also, along with Lakatos and Kuhn, you also have a problem with Kenneth Arrow's path dependence or increasing returns. That's one reason why they won't disclose it. It's too painful to admit. But I just want to read a couple things from Mr. Schellenberger's, what he gave to us today, because I think this is interesting stuff, and I just want to convey this to you. On USG networks, there exists infrared footage of and imagery of a grouping of vessels engaged in signet and mass collection at night in a specific area of the Pacific Ocean. This footage, which was in close proximity to the vessels, a large equilateral triangle UAP suddenly appears directly over the ships. Three bright points are seen at each bottom corner of the UAP, which is observed to slowly rotate on its horizontal axis. And he goes on to describe that. And I just want to read one more, and I'm doing this because I think it's interesting. This stuff is interesting as anything. So let's get this one here, right here. While performing a routine airspace surveillance and control mission in the Eastern Air Defense Sector, an F-22 fighter observed multiple UAP contacts at mission altitude. Moving to intercept, the F-22 pilot noted multiple metallic orbs slightly smaller than a sedan hovering in place. Upon vectoring towards the UAPs, a smaller formation of the metallic orbs accelerated at rapid speed towards the F-22, which was unable to establish radar locks on the presumed hostile UAPs. The F-22 broke trajectory and attempted to evade, but was intercepted and boxed in by approximately 3 to 6 UAPs. And then I'll leave that there, but because I just have no more time left. She's not looking. So let's get into part of this.
I thought I would be saved by the bell.
No. Let's talk about Kunian, Lakatoshian type of scientific development. And the problem that we have here is you have institutional blockage of what would be normal development of scientific ideas. And if you want to expand that, Mr.
Gold. We're over time, so be very fast, please.
I'll just say I'm a recovering attorney, so please take it easy on the science. But all breakthroughs have been heretical at first, and that's the challenge that we face, particularly with something as extraordinary as this, which is why gathering the data is so important. And I'll just end by saying, by the way, the overclassification of material is in no way limited to UAP. That is occurring throughout the government, as well as the inability to get people classifications in a timely and efficient manner, and then to have those classifications be broad enough to be useful. So this is a larger issue that I hope the Congress will look
at. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Biggs. I've been generous. All right, Mr. Burleson, I'll recognize you for 5 minutes of questions, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Elizondo, does any branch of the United States government or defense contractors possess technology?
Sir, there's documentation that I believe was submitted for the record that was approved for release by the U.S. Pentagon, by the Department of Defense Office of Pre-Publication Security Review, and it states one of the reasons why my predecessor program, OSAP, was trying to collect material of unknown origin.
Was it successfully collected?
It was not. What happened is that there was an aerospace contract company that requested to divest itself of the material that was collected in 1950s. Right. Unfortunately, that didn't actually occur.
So let's dive into that. That's the Bigelow Airspace, correct? So
yes, sir.
There was a journalist, Christopher Sharp, who said that there was a transfer between Lockheed Martin, Bigelow Airspace, and the CIA allegedly blocked this. Can you describe that?
What I can say is that it was blocked. Why it was blocked, I can only surmise. I was part of some conversations later on with some of those contract personnel where they had told all of us that is accurate. What we required was a memo from the Secretary of the Air Force in order to make that complete, and that never occurred. And so when Secretary Mattis became Secretary of Defense, I decided it would be appropriate for me to try to receive a memo from him as SecDef, as Secretary of Defense, if we could not get a memo from the Secretary of the Air Force to transfer that material.
So if that material exists today, who's in possession?
Sir, I wouldn't be able to have that conversation in an open hearing. We'd probably have to have that.
Okay, my question to you then is, if we were in a secure setting, if we were in a SCIF, would you be able to provide or get access to something, whether it's a visuals or material that we could put our hands on, or biologics, that would convince me, that would show me that we have non-human origins?
Sir, that decision would not be mine. That would be to the gatekeeper still in the U.S. government.
And who would we... So if you were in our shoes, where would you go from here? How would you get that information? A lot of times we just don't know who to ask because we don't know where to go next. So if you were in our shoes, where would you go?
Well, I prefer to answer that question in a closed session. However, we established Aero for that very purpose, and unfortunately, under its previous leadership, it failed. So one would hope that they would have the authorities necessary to do that. Let's hope that this new iteration of leadership will be successful.
In the discussions, it's simply about material, or is there discussion about biologics? It was previously testified that there was biologics that were collected. Are you aware of any of that?
I am, sir, aware of the reporting that biologics have been recovered. Again, my focus was more nuts and bolts, looking at the physical aspects of these phenomena, how they interacted around military equities and nuclear equities. So I'm certainly not a medical expert. I would not be able to probably provide you a whole lot of value in that simply because I don't have the expertise.
But was anything described as that we have possession of bodies?
Yes. Yes.
We have is it multiple types of creatures or?
Sir, I couldn't answer that. I can tell you anecdotally that it was discussed quite a bit when I was at the Pentagon. The problem is the supposed collection of these biological samples occurred before my time, in fact, before I was even born.
And was this part of the Lockheed Martin discussion, or was this the biologics is a completely separate?
Separate yet related.
Okay. Has anyone made contact?
Sir, I'm sorry, could you specify?
Has there been any, to your knowledge, any communication with a non-human life form?
So the term communication is a bit of a trick word because there's verbal communication like we're having now. The problem is you also have nonverbal communication. And so I would say definitively yes, but from a nonverbal meaning, when a Russian reconnaissance aircraft comes into U.S. airspace, we scramble two F-22s, and we are certainly communicating intent and capability. I think the same goes with this. We have these things that are being observed over controlled U.S. airspace, and they're not really doing a good job hiding themselves. They're making it pretty obvious they have the ability to even interfere with our nuclear equities and our nuclear readiness.
Is the United States government or and our contractors, are they pulling technology from this? Are they reverse engineering this?
Sir, as I previously stated, and please forgive me, I am not authorized to discuss specifics about crash retrievals. I signed documentation with the U.S. government. What I can say was, after a very thorough review process by the Pentagon, what I wrote about. And that was my limit, unfortunately, that I was given.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I would like to recognize Mr. Timmons for 5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Elizondo, you just said something interesting. You said they don't seem to be hiding. They don't seem to be hiding. The UAP sightings are becoming increasingly brash, if you will. And, we've been hearing about these for years, but they've generally been isolated and not as consistent and over critical military installations. Would you say that's fair? Is this becoming increasingly often? Is it happening more and more?
Great question, sir. Let me see if I can answer this for you. Certainly, there seems to be some indication that they're being provocative, meaning that they're, in some cases, literally splitting aircraft formations right down the middle. So that's an air safety issue. The question is it the frequency increasing? And the response is, it depends. Yes, it's possible that there is an increase in frequency, but it's also possible that there's heightened awareness now, and there's also more pervasiveness of technology out there that's collecting this information and that can record this information. So we're not quite sure yet if it's actually an increase in numbers of these events, or is it that we have better equipment now that to record these things and we have a better ability, if you will, to analyze these things.
And that's my next question. It seems that a lot of these sightings occur near military installations. Do you think that these UAPs are intentionally targeting military installations, or do you think that we have increased abilities to monitor surrounding the military installations?
Sir, maybe both. Part of my concern is we have something in the Department of Defense and the intelligence community called IPB, Initial Preparations of the Battle Space. And we use equities like ISR, Intelligence, Surveillance, Reconnaissance, and other type of equities and technologies to prep the battle space. And certainly, if I was wearing my national security hat, even if there was a 2% chance that there was some sort of hostile intent here, that's 2% higher than we really can accept. And so we must figure out, there's a calculus, capabilities versus intent, in order to identify if something is a national security threat. We've seen some of the capabilities, yet we have no idea in the intent. And so this is why this discussion is somewhat, I think, problematic from a governmental perspective, because we have no idea.
Sure, thank you. Mr. Schellenberger, you're particularly familiar with the Langley Air Force Base incident a year ago? Are you familiar?
Just from what I read in the
news. From what you've read?
Yeah.
I would imagine a large percentage of the American population became aware of that with the Wall Street Journal article. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And were you aware of that incident prior to the Wall Street Journal article?
No.
To the rest of the panel, was the Wall Street Journal article the first time that y'all were made aware of what was essentially an over 2 week UAP frenzy over Langley Air Force Base? Were y'all aware of this prior to the Wall Street Journal article? Anybody? Show of hands. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Gaya, could you give me your, how did you become aware of it?
A colleague of mine who I referenced previously, Chris Mellon, he wrote an extensive article about this, that there were other incursions of drones over Langley before this, as well as many, many military installations over the last 5 decades.
And it's my understanding that there's been an ever-increasing in number, and I'm trying to think how to say this because I wear two different hats. I'm still in the Air Force. So I mean, it seems that they're becoming increasingly brash, and the question that we really have to figure out is, is it China or is it non-human? And I think that's the biggest question the American people want to know. If it's China, it's scary because they have a lot of technology that we cannot explain, and if it's non-human, that's scary because we don't know the intent. Would you say that's fair?
Yes, Congressman. And in fact, I really believe that we should use this hearing to, as a catalyst to improve and bolster our air defense capabilities and our maritime domain awareness capabilities, because obviously there are holes in it, whether it be UAP of non-HI direction or NHI direction, or, like you, as you say, sir, China or any other adversary.
Are you all aware of any task force at the Pentagon or in the national security apparatus that's trying to assess the answer to that question?
At the current moment, sir, no, but this is a great point. From 2020 to 2022, there was a UAP task force in the DOD succeeding where Mr. Elizondo worked, led by Jay Stratton, who had the first comprehensive whole-of-government approach to UAP, which involved pathways to declassification and to increase transparency, as well as assessing the national security risks of UAP. This was a really well-established approach, and we have all advocated that something like it return.
I'm running out of time. The last thing is that we need authorities. The law enforcement, military do not have authorities to actually engage, and Congress needs to act to give those authorities to local law enforcement and the military so they have clear guidelines on how to assess these issues going forward. I yield back. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Ms. Boebert for 5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now that we have all been cautioned in this committee hearing that the mention of Pentagon's Immaculate Constellation program could put us on a list, I already find myself on many lists, I'm sure. So I speak my mind often, so why not just keep going with it? May as well just go all out and say it. The Earth is flat, birds are government drones, and we've never set foot on the moon, and Joe Biden received 81 million votes in the 2020 election. So let's just see how many lists we could get on here today. But Mr. Schellenberger, I wanted to ask you, I think I understand from this hearing that you would agree that classifying information like this is not in the best interest of the people. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, with the caveat that, of course, I would support classification necessary to protect secrets essential to national security, but I think it's pretty obvious that there's overclassification.
Overclassification, yes. And so in most instances, if they can't tell us what, do you think at some point they'll at least tell us why?
President-elect Trump has repeatedly committed to greater transparency, both on the UAP issue, on JFK files, on COVID origins and many other things. So I think that we need to make sure that the next administration is held accountable for that.
Agreed. And this is for all four of you. Yes or no, please. I have many questions I want to get to. Are there any known instances of recovered materials or technologies that are not of human origin and maybe connected to any advanced bioscience defense programs within the USG?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be able to answer that, ma'am.
I don't know.
Okay, so there are rumors that have come up to the Hill of a secretive project within the Department of Defense involving the manipulation of human genetics with what is described as non-human genetic material, potentially for the enhancement of human capabilities, hybrids. Are any of you familiar with that? Yes or no?
No, ma'am.
I am not, ma'am.
I'm not.
No, ma'am.
Okay, I would like to know, with Immaculate Constellation, how does this relate to UAP activities, Mr. Schellenberg, in oceanic environments? Are there any instances where the Navy or other maritime forces have encountered UAPs that could not be explained by known technology or natural phenomena?
Yeah, the Immaculate Constellation covers both terrestrial and oceanic, and there's actually a number of cases described in the report that occur in the ocean.
And do you believe that there is a concerted effort by the Pentagon to keep Congress out of the loop regarding these UAP activities, specifically in our waters?
Yes.
I think it's about 5% of our ocean that's actually been studied in detail by man, and we've studied more of space than we had of our own oceans. And so are there any accounts of UAPs emerging from or submerging into our water which could indicate a base or presence beneath the ocean's surface?
I don't know about a base, but, you know, as I mentioned, I had a different source entirely describe this pretty extraordinary footage that exists of orbs, of an orb coming out of the ocean and being met by another orb.
Some would say that there's multiple hotspots where we see frequent activity. So in your investigations, have you come across any data or visual evidence like sonar readings or underwater footage of these UAPs?
I have not beyond what's in the report.
You've written about UAPs not only in the air but in underwater. Are there any specifics on what you've learned about the UAP activity in our oceans? Particularly, have you spoken with sources who have provided any evidence or eyewitness accounts of these UAPs interacting with our naval forces or being detected by our underwater surveillance systems?
Nothing beyond what's in the report and then the specific case that I mentioned with the orb.
So this report says it all. There's no other information that we are aware of regarding the activity within our waters.
I have other sources that have told me that have shared a significant amount of information, but they're not comfortable with me sharing it at this point.
Okay. Are there any technological capabilities observed in these oceanic UAPs that seem to defy our current understanding of physics or our engineering capabilities?
It seems like they all do.
Yes, I would agree with that. My time is up, but I do appreciate your bravery, your courage for coming here and speaking today. And it seems like there's still some questions that we need answers to, and we will not relent until we get those to the American people. Thank you all.
Thank you. I move to allow myself and the ranking member 5 additional minutes for questions without objection, so ordered. Mr. Elizondo, were you read into the Immaculate Constellation program?
Ma'am, I would not be authorized to confirm nor deny the existence of any ongoing or past program, especially as it relates to a special access program, either by name or trigraph.
Okay. And then are there, does the U.S. government or private contractors, do they work with other foreign countries, China, for example, to exchange data, quote, from a source, that intelligence data about UAP?
Let me see if I can answer that a little bit more generally, ma'am, if I may. We do have foreign material exploitation programs. That is something that is widely known, and that term itself is unclassified. How exactly that works becomes a bit sensitive. A discussion we could certainly have in a closed session, if you like. We do work with international partners and allies quite often, not just in military exercises and workups, but in other intelligence efforts as well.
In terms of material that's given to private contractors, is certain material given to certain contractors because of their experience? So, for example, if it's related to submerged and undersea propulsion, would it go to a general contractor like General Dynamics?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely correct. Different contractors have different levels of expertise.
What's Lockheed's expertise?
Aerospace, ma'am.
In the UAP space. That's all that they would do submerged.
No, I didn't say that, ma'am.
Okay.
Lockheed Martin and others do quite a bit of work both in our atmosphere, in space, and even underwater. There are certain efforts to... It's a tough question you're asking. You put me on the spot here.
I'm looking for the answer.
Yes, ma'am. No, they are involved in a lot. I would rather let Lockheed Martin explain the different domains that they are involved with. Probably not authorized to discuss that, but they are involved in a lot of different areas and domains.
Admiral, flight safety risks for our pilots based on what you've experienced and seen in your career?
They're extensive, and the one exercise I referred to where I received the email that was then deleted was the pilots, and this is worth bringing out. There are debunkers out there who have said the GoFast video was just a balloon. That was only one video that was released. There were dozens of these encounters that pilots, friends of Ryan Graves, who's in this room right here, witnessed and caused significant safety concerns. And to almost call out an exercise and shut it down, which is very compressed, and the carrier's getting ready for deployment, and the pilots have to get certified to land on a carrier, it's extreme, to say the least.
All right, I have two last questions. Real quickly, Mr. Schellenberger, how do we get more whistleblowers to come forward?
Well, this hearing is very important. And obviously, I can't encourage whistleblowers to obtain information, but I can guarantee that I will protect them and go to prison to protect their identities if they come to me.
Yes, sir. Okay, my last question. The first hearing we had on this, I'd never been briefed on UAPs or what they were, biologics, non-human, et cetera. How would you define, each of you, my last question, how would you define non-human biologics, non-human intelligence? What are we actually talking about? Admiral, and we'll go down the line.
I don't think it's a stretch when you look at the diversity of life on this planet and the size of this universe to think that there would be more diverse, higher order, non-human intelligences throughout the universe. And that's probably what's visiting us.
I would take the scientific approach. The definition would be the ability to react to a stimulus in a manner that requires an intellectual thought process.
I just don't know.
I think we must be modest in our assumptions that we're looking for intelligence that could be biological. It might not.
Non-biological. But what non-biological intelligence, what does that mean, though?
Artificial intelligence, ML, machines. We assume that all intelligence would be like us. And every time we look out in the universe, we are humbled relative to what we don't know in terms of the forms of intelligence and what it may take. I can assure you, I probably can't ask you your question, but I think the ultimate answer is going to surprise us all.
And then Mr. Garcia, you had a few closing remarks.
And I know we're about to get hit votes here, so I'll be brief. Just I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank Chairwoman Mace especially for holding this important bipartisan hearing. And I want to thank all the committee members that are interested in this topic. I think our commitment to all of you and all the folks that have contacted us, and certainly to the advocates and the pilots, is that we need to continue investigating UAPs. I think the country is owed explanations and ensure that the safety of national security is always protected. This is a conversation and questioning that must continue, so I'm very grateful to all of you. And I also just want to just add, just personally, I think it's really important for me, two things guide my questioning and my observations on UAPs. Is one is we should always be guided by facts, science, and data. And stay serious on those issues. And the second thing is I think that we should not limit our imagination and our thoughts and our curiosity on what UAPs could actually be. And I think those two things for me are really important, and I'm grateful for all of you to be here. So with that, I yield back.
Okay, and we have Mr. Ogles, who is on the way. He's going to be here any second. Is that correct? Want to check, and he'll be the last member with questions that we have today, and then we have votes. So we want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank Mr. Garcia and folks on both sides of the aisle for being here today and being patient. We have a lot more questions, and I hope that this will open the door to more hearings in the future. I obviously would like to know how much taxpayers are spending on this. You have the right to know. But also, if we're spending money on something that doesn't exist, why are we spending the money? And if it does exist, why are we hiding it from the public? And of course, our national security is a huge issue, because if there's technology that could harm us or our allies that are in the hands of our adversaries, we obviously want to stay ahead of that to the best of our ability to ensure that that technology is not in the hands of someone who could use it against us or our allies anywhere in the world. So, Mr. Ogles, you're just in time, babe. I will recognize you for 5 minutes of questioning before we head on out today.
Well, thank you all for being here, and Madam Chairwoman, I'm out of breath because I sprinted to get here, but this is an important hearing. I think we all know that there's something going on. Mr. Elizondo, based on your knowledge of UAP sightings, do you believe it's fair to say that they are especially common near nuclear sites?
Yes, sir. Mr. Congressman, I absolutely am convinced of that, as are my colleagues inside the government.
And the reason why I pose that question, and this has been one of my talking points from the beginning, is, you know, Oak Ridge is in Tennessee. The so-called weather balloon that drifted, that we now know was controlled, it passed near Oak Ridge. It obviously is a sensitive site, both of interest to our adversaries and to whatever else this is. Because we know that at military installations, at sensitive locations, such as nuclear facilities, that we're seeing this take place. So the question is what is it? Do you believe they've caused an irregular activity, and why might they be interested in those sites?
Sir, in some cases, it's actually regular activity. You'd be surprised. There's actually documentation right now that's been submitted. It's not just Oak Ridge. It's Savannah River site, SRS. It's also Los Alamos. A lot of our sensitive R&D locations appear to be under some sort of surveillance and monitoring. Why? Well, because a lot of innovation comes out of those areas, a lot of new technologies, a lot of, if you will, disruptive technologies that we use for our national defense originates out of those locations, and advanced concepts in physics as well. So if I was doing any type of reconnaissance, even on a foreign adversary, that's a great target to start with.
Sure. And again, this has been one of my talking points. I do have questions. What role might the Department of Energy or its subsidiaries or affiliates have in this type of technology? Or possessing this type of technology, whether it's ours or others. Mr. Gayoude, I think your testimony has been pretty clear, but would you please reiterate that, do you believe UAPs pose a threat to pilots? Excuse me.
Yes, sir. I absolutely. They were threatening Navy pilots during the exercise that I was, my people were involved with in 2015, and it's my understanding they're risking pilot safety, commercial and military, today.
Well, considering, and I understand that there's a need in some cases to keep certain technologies secret, but you believe that it is posing a threat to our personnel, correct?
Yes, sir.
So I think it's reasonable to conclude that if there is a threat to our personnel who are serving our country faithfully, that there be oversight.
100%, Congressman. And in fact, that's the one thing that we've not talked about enough during this hearing, is the fact that the government executive branch not sharing with Congress what it knows about UAP infringes on your legislative and oversight responsibilities to such an extent that's very concerning. I mean, what else are we, if you look at national security or intelligence or foreign affairs or appropriations, you all have oversight and legislative responsibility regarding those. This UAP issue may be the greatest issue of our time, and it's being hid from you.
Well, I mean, and to your point, I think we've seen over the decades that we have certain adversaries like China, like Russia, that technologically speaking are not as advanced as us, that they lack some of the lethality that we have, and that we've seen that they've gone after our technologies and in some cases succeeded, in particular with missile technology. And so, again, my concern, whether this technology emanates from us or otherworldly, that we know that we possess it. And where's the accountability? Where are the stopgaps? What are the guarantees that if this were to fall in enemy hands, that it isn't immediately weaponized against us? And I'll say this, it is clear from my experience and what I've seen that there is something out there. The question is it ours? Is it someone else's? Or is it otherworldly? And Madam Chairman, I would posit that as the legislative body, as the regulatory body, we must know. And anyone who prevents us from gaining access to that information, I would consider that criminality. Because we have U.S. personnel who may very well be in harm's way. We have technology that ultimately may threaten our very existence. With that, Madam Chairman, I thank you for your indulgence, and I yield back.
Thank you, Mr. Ogles. And with that and without objection, all members will have 5 legislative days within which to submit materials and to submit additional written questions for the witnesses, which will be forwarded to the witnesses for their response. If there's no further business without objection, the subcommittee stands adjourned.
appreciate you.
Well done, sir. Thank you.
Literally.